Now, there's been more big news this week on the investigation into Russian interference during the 2016 election. Special Counsel Robert Mueller and his team requested documents from some of the president's most controversial actions in the Oval Office, including the firing of then-FBI Director James Comey. They've also requested phone records from Air Force One.
But President Trump continues to question the legitimacy of the investigation, calling it a hoax on Twitter this morning, which has some people asking whether the president could fire Mueller.
Lowell Barrington joins us now. He's an associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. Lowell, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, what do you see, Lowell, as the biggest news on this since the last time we talked to you about the investigation?
That's a tough question. There's been a lot of news just this week alone. I think the Facebook news, while that's getting a lot of attention because the decision was made to turn over the content of the ads that had been bought by the Russian social media forces, I think that's actually much less important in some ways because it's really just details of a story that we knew. I'm in some ways a little bit more interested in the kinds of things that Mueller is asking for and the extent to which that marks a bit of a shift toward focusing on the president himself a bit more and also focusing on the period of time when he was president as opposed to the campaign.
Which kind of documents are they looking for to get from the president?
Well, there's both the documents related to that Oval Office meeting that I think sometimes we think about now or don't think enough about now, maybe when the top Russian officials were in the Oval Office and he had mentioned after firing Comey to them specifically about how this was going to reduce pressure on the Russia investigation. But also they're asking for documents about the statement that was made about the Donald Trump Jr. Led meeting in June of 2016. And that's interesting because, again, the statement itself, unlike the meeting, was something when the president was already in office as president.
And does that point toward any potential charges in this case? I'm not sure if they can directly charge the president with something like obstruction of justice, but does that point toward the sorts of things that the team could be charging people with?
I think clearly when you start to look at the things around Comey's firing and the reasons for it, and when you look at the president's role, for example, in wording a statement that was at best misleading, I think those clearly point toward a continuing interest in the question of obstruction of justice. I would add, though, I don't think the rest of the things that they've been looking at are going away. I still think, as we had talked about last time, that ultimately there will be a very interesting financial story at the heart of what Mueller finds.
Right. And I've seen some observers say we're really seeing the tip of the iceberg and we really don't know what the rest of the iceberg looks like or even if there is an iceberg when it comes to what the Mueller investigation is going after.
Yeah, that's a really important point. I think that we know what Mueller's looking for, or at least, let's say, some of what he's looking at right now. But we really don't know what he knows. We don't know what he's found, what he's really taking out of the information that he's been given as the point of focus, which is also, I would add, by the way, there's been some speculation that Mueller and his team are the ones doing a lot of the leaking. I'm a bit surprised by that claim because I think the idea that we know what he's looking at but we don't know what he's found points to the leaks actually coming from others, either the people themselves that he's interviewing or the people that are getting the request for documents more than from Mueller himself.
Is the White House obliged to release these documents to a special prosecutor?
Well, that's an interesting question. There are certain things that they can claim to prevent that from happening, and so it's always a mix of what they have legal rights to do and what politically is in their interest, and those two things are not always the same. So they may have a legal right to withhold information, but ultimately they'd have to decide then if certain information that even can be legally withheld, if that's really in their interest politically to do so.
And we know that there's been an argument among President Trump's legal team about this because one member of that team, Ty Cobb, sharing a name with a famous baseball player, was arguing about this, whether they should release documents in public at a restaurant near the New York Times Washington Bureau across the restaurant from New York Times reporter. And this was all overheard.
Right, and that was both an interesting, I think, important, but also in a way amusing story of the week, that the reporter was sitting a table away, essentially taking photos of them, having this very loud conversation. And I think one of the things about that, it really points to, in some ways, the self-inflicted wounds of this investigation for the Trump White House, that they continue to do things that in some ways are really unnecessary, and that a kind of more experienced legal team, I think, would not do.
Let's get into Paul Manafort a little bit. He was the campaign manager for the Trump campaign for a while. A lot of news out about him. It turns out it looks like he was under FBI surveillance before he worked for the campaign, again, after he worked for the campaign. Talk about the role he plays in this investigation.
Well, he's been a focus for quite a while now. I think Mueller had been looking both at Flynn and Manafort very early on. And I don't think that was a big secret. We obviously had the very high-profile events, such as the, you know, going into his apartment and collecting information with a warrant not that long ago. So I think we've known for a while he was a focus. I think the interesting questions now revolve around what exactly Mueller's trying to do by what seems to be a bit, you know, kind of turning up the pressure on him. And one of the questions, I guess, that I would throw at somebody who thinks this is all about Manafort is, why are they putting so much pressure on Manafort? Because normally when prosecutors do this, they are trying to get somebody to, you know, to turn or to talk about someone above them. And if we're thinking about somebody who is running the campaign, again, there aren't too many people above him that Mueller could be trying to use Manafort to basically give information about.
We're talking to Lowell Barrington right now, associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at Marquette University.
Coming up, we'll continue the conversation about the ongoing federal probe into Russian interference during the 2016 election. You can join the conversation with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And right now we're continuing our conversation about the ongoing Russia investigation and some of the latest developments.
Lowell Barrington is with us, associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. Lowell, we were talking about Paul Manafort in this investigation, talk that the Mueller team was going to try to flip him, in effect, get him to testify against others in the campaign and the administration. Some conservative commentators are saying, hey, this is some heavy-handed stuff, you know, picking his lock basically on this guns-drawn raid. They're playing hardball, brass knuckles, one commentator called it. Is there a case to be made that they're overplaying their hand there when it comes to Paul Manafort?
There's no question that the prosecutors and certainly that particular event of going into his apartment was done in a pretty forceful way. I don't think it's out of bounds compared to how many prosecutors address situations like this. And I think the more interesting question in some ways is why are they engaging in this kind of pressure? Again, what are they trying to get him to realize and to try to do? But the other thing is, a lot was made about that they didn't give him warning about coming into his apartment. And again, there's a question of why they did that and why they were able to actually get a warrant that allowed them to do that in the first place. And one of the arguments for that kind of entry is that you don't want someone to potentially destroy evidence by giving them a heads up ahead of time. And that means you also have to have a lot of evidence to point to for a judge to order that kind of or allow that kind of warrant in the first place.
You mentioned earlier that another angle to watch for here is the financial side of things, I guess involving, what, the Trump Organization or Paul Manafort himself? What kind of connections are you watching for?
Well, this has been one of the questions throughout, and again, it goes back to the point about we know a bit about what Mueller's been looking at, and we know the team he has surrounded himself with. We know he's working with the New York State Attorney General much more closely now, who focuses heavily, as you know, on financial crimes in his work. And so I think there's plenty of evidence he's looking for or looking at the financial side of this issue. But we don't quite know what he has entirely found yet. But it would involve both Manafort and his financial ties, both involving Ukraine and Russia. And potentially the president himself, and it's very difficult to engage in the kind of real estate deals and different things that he was doing in Russia, but especially also in some other countries around Russia, without, you know, having some really interesting financial situations that might come out of that.
And one more piece of Paul Manafort news that just came out him apparently via email offering to give a briefing to a Russian billionaire after he had been announced as a campaign advisor, a chief strategist for the Donald Trump campaign. What do we know about that?
Well, and that was new news, although, again, I mean, not terribly surprising, I think, to a lot of us. And I would add one of the ways that that fits into the financial picture is there is some sense that Mueller is starting to look a little more at ways in which people might have used their positions for financial gain, both in the campaign and since the inauguration. So certainly, if I were Manafort, I would be worried about that story because it does, again, point to the idea that he might have been trying to use his position to really gain additional connections and leverage with wealthy oligarchs.
I want to get back to that Facebook story we talked about earlier where there had been Russian ads apparently placed on Facebook during the campaign. I want to listen to New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand talking to CNN this week about this issue. Here's a listen.
They're not above the law, and it is illegal for foreign countries to undermine or participate in our elections. So buying those Facebook ads is illegal. So what we need is more disclosure and more accountability, more transparency. But they have a role to play, and we need to have much better accountability by the next election.
And Lowell, you said earlier, this is not, for you, the high-profile part of this story. But is there something here that we should be worried about?
Well, yeah, I don't think that I want to imply it's unimportant. I think it's just something that we really knew in a lot of ways already. So these are details about a story of Russian involvement as opposed to a kind of new significant piece of a story that we didn't know about. And, you know, Russia has been engaged in this kind of work for a long time now, really as far back as 2014, certainly into 2015. There were a number of stories about the Russian troll farms that were using fake Facebook sites and other social media efforts to spread one of the stranger stories, the spreading of untrue disaster stories in the United States. And there was a sense that what they were doing was really poking around at that point to see how things would spread if put into the American social media networks. So I think it's a very important story, and clearly it's something we need to be worrying about before 2018 and 2020. I would say that Mark Zuckerberg's comments and Facebook seeming to really own up to this much more than they had initially is an important step. The interesting question out of that, though, is what the government itself is going to do in terms of taking steps to try to prevent this next time.
And Twitter had a less active response. It said, essentially, I think the community will police itself when it comes to these bots that spread stories, these fake identities on Twitter. Do you see any changes coming there?
That's a good question. I certainly think it was an important step that Facebook took to take more responsibility and indicate that they will be much more diligent about not allowing this to happen again. But again, there's no clear legal case against Twitter right now. I think it's really a question, again, of what kinds of regulations we might be looking at putting in place that would be new and govern some of this behavior. And again, the question really is what incentive there is for Congress or certainly the White House to go along with those new efforts if they were to be encouraged even by the social media networks themselves.
Lowell, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thank you.
That's Lowell Barrington, Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. He joined us today to talk about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's ongoing investigation into Russian interference during the 2016 elections.